took its course through the hands of the sun. Revenge for old
Hey everybody, this is DJ Detour with my show Behind the Bit, and today for my first segment, I'm going to talk about some gimmicks and training tools that I really enjoy using and have gained a lot of benefit from. And gimmicks, to start off with, is also known as a training tool or a piece of equipment that you would use to assist you in your training. So the first one I'm going to talk about is a rope halter, which is a very simple piece of equipment, but can be very important and useful if used in the right way. So a rope halter is a halter. It's unlike regular halters, which are usually nylon halters with hardware on the sides of the horse's face and a buckle on the left side for you to take it on and off. Instead, a rope halter is made of rope and has knots in the place of where the hardware on traditional halters usually is. And instead of using a buckle, you use a knot to tie it on. And the reason that these can be used as training tools is because when you use the lead rope to put pressure on the horse, it's going to create pressure points where the knots on the rope halter is. So if used correctly, they're a really good training tool for your horse's ground manners. And next, there are what is called draw reins. And the reins, usually when you have your horse in a bridle, is the piece of leather or some type of nylon that connects the bit to your hands. And what draw reins do is they have clips and they clip onto your horse's girth, which is underneath their belly. They come up in front of their front legs. Then you lace them through the horse's bit and you'll have two sets of reins in your hands. And usually what you do is you have it so the draw reins go underneath your pinkies when you're holding the reins. And you usually hold your reins like you're holding ice cream cones, so they'd be underneath the bottom of your hand. And when you're riding, it's a good tool to use to help put your horse's head in the right position to create a good frame for their body. And this is by... when you apply pressure, it's going to pull their head down and it's going to be a lot less confusing than some of the other techniques that people use. And those are a really beneficial tool, again, if used correctly. They're very helpful, and I know I use them quite often and I enjoy using them. And the next piece is actually a gimmick that I haven't used before, but I am dying to get myself one. They're called a tack collar. And what a tack collar is it is a leather, almost strap-looking piece of tack, and it goes around your horse's neck, and you use it in place of using a bridle. And usually, a lot of times when you see people riding bridleless, they'll just use a plain piece of leather around their horse's neck or a plain piece of nylon. But going directly from using a bridle to using one of those, your horse is probably not going to listen to anything you say. They're going to go do whatever they want, and it is not going to be fun for you. So what a tack collar is it's a leather piece, like I had just said, but it has small... I believe, depending on what size you get, but it has small metal studs on the inside of the collar. Usually they only have about three of them. But this is, it's kind of the in-between tool from going from a bridle that has a bit that goes in your horse's mouth to going bridleless with just a plain piece of leather. So that's definitely something that I know I want to use and am very excited to use, because riding bridleless is really fun if you have a horse that is trained correctly. The next gimmick I'm going to talk about is a surcingle. And a surcingle is either a leather, again, or nylon piece of equipment that goes on your horse's back where your saddle would go. And it's a thin, depending on the size that you get, some of them are only about 4 inches wide, some of them are a little bit wider. And then it has a girth attached to it so it'll stay put on your horse's back. And usually you use these when you're lunging your horse. And the purpose of using a surcingle while lunging your horse is that you can attach side reins, which go to the side of your horse's face and are attached to the side of the surcingle. So again, kind of similar to draw reins, it's another way to help your horse obtain muscle on the top side of their neckline, and which will make it easier when you ride to get them into the correct position for their head. And depending on your style of riding, there's different rings that you can put the side reins on to get their head in a different position. And again, this is another good tool for building muscle similar to draw reins. And while speaking about lunging your horse, another really cool tool, if you are not using a surcingle, attaching it to a bridle, is a connector, which sounds really simple, but it was a long time before I got one, and oh my gosh, it makes things so much easier. Instead of connecting the clip on the end of your lunge line to one side of their bit or the other side of their bit, a connector connects both of the rings on both sides of their bit to one nylon ring. And it sounds silly, but it is so helpful and it is so much easier, and it's going to apply pressure evenly to both sides of your horse's mouth. So you're not going to be yanking on one side or the other. And it's just extremely helpful. And I think if you're lunging your horse, it is a must have. It's great. Next are spurs, which are commonly mistaken for riding tools that are abusive, and they definitely are not if you use them right. And what spurs are, if you do not already know, is they are the metal or sometimes also plastic piece that goes on the back of your boot, and they have them in both the Western discipline as well as the English discipline. Some of them have rowels on it, which are the part that spins around. And usually they almost have like a flower looking design on the rowel. And what the point of using a spur is to encourage your horse to move forward without having to kick the bejesus out of them. Because if you've ridden a horse, there's always that one that is just so lazy. And using spurs, even on horses that aren't lazy, it's essentially an extension of your foot, and all you do is simply roll it on the side of your horse. You do not stab them, or they're actually more, in my opinion, more humane than kicking the snot out of your horse. Because I know with my horse, he already knows that I'm wearing them. I don't even have to roll them on my horse. If I just gently touch them to his sides, he knows, okay, I'm going forward. I don't want you to kick me. He doesn't, I don't like to do it. He doesn't like it either. So spurs, if you know how to use them correctly, are a very good tool to use. As well as crops and whips. I do not use them on my horse because I use spurs. But a lot of people do use crops or whips to, again, encourage your horse to move forward. I do use sometimes a dressage whip, which is a longer whip. It's usually about, if you stood on the ground, it would stand about 2.5, maybe 3 feet tall. And they are very good tools to use when you are working with your horse on the ground. They're to be used as an extension of your arm. So instead of needing to move to the back of your horse to ask him to move his haunches over, which is the back end of your horse, you just put the whip over there and usually they get the idea. You don't have to usually even touch them with it. So those are, it's a very good tool for groundwork, and it's also a very good tool for groundwork with horses that have bad behavior, because it's going to keep you out of the way of getting injured, which is always a good thing. And there's also gimmicks that you can use for yourself to improve your skills. And one of my favorite, which is actually a lot of people use it as a game, is egg and spoon. And when you're riding your horse, you would hold in either one of your hands or switch off a spoon and put an egg in it. And if you don't have eggs, you can use a golf ball, or, yeah, a golf ball would probably be the best. But the point of doing that is to make sure that you as a rider are balanced and you're not swinging your arms around or moving your upper body a lot. So it helps kind of give you a gauge of how steady you are as a rider, which is always good because we're always teaching our horses things, and it's good for us to continue our learning as well. And there's also what my trainers used to make me do when I was a lot younger was a lot of people call it trainer's hunch when you're riding. And it's when you hunch your shoulders forward and you're looking more down at the horse instead of up in front of you with your shoulders back. So that is a posture error on the rider's part. And one way, a couple ways to correct that other than just being conscious of it. One way is to use a whip and put it behind your elbows while you're riding, so you have to sit up. And the other is putting a hanger in the back of your shirt, which are both, I think, very interesting and fun ways to make sure that you, again, as a rider, are keeping yourself in a good position, because it's definitely going to affect the way that your horse reacts to you. So those are some training tools that I enjoy using, and that's going to wrap it up for this. And we'll be back in a couple minutes. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
What do you want me to do for you to see you through? A box of rain will ease the pain and love to see you. Just a box of rain, wind and water. Believe it if you need it. If you don't, just pass it on. Sun and shower, wind and rain, in and out the window like a moth before a flame. Of rain. I don't know who put it there. Believe it if you need it, or need it if you dare. And it's just a box of rain, or a ribbon for your hair. Such a long, long time to be gone, and a short time to be there.
Listen to Jam Master as the master starts to play. And when they go, just check the show, cause they're scratching with their toe and even his elbow.
Ha! Roots, rock, reggae. Stomp your feet, clap your hands. At the microphone is King Yellow Man. In Jamaica, I'm the champion. This is Roots, rock, reggae.
Repeat.
Roots, rock, reggae. Hotter, hotter, hotter reggae music. Hotter, hotter, hotter reggae music. Hotter, hotter, hotter reggae music. I know we know that reggae is sweet. Reggae music is rock to the beat. Clap your hands and stamp your feet. Roots, rock, reggae. Roots, rock.
Now party people, I'm so happy. Don't know what to do, cause I'm an MC with the rhyme and down with the crew. Rock from Africa to France and the Kalamazoo. And every place that I play, I hit a yay, not a boo. And now a party, not a party, and a jam ain't a jam. Let's D is who we be, and I am who I am. OJ is just a DJ cutting for the two. And it's the three of us, baby, and we're doing the do.
5 + 5 = 10. Everywhere I go, I got a lot of girlfriend. Music is sweet.
Hey, this is DJ Detour, back with my show Behind the Bit, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And for this segment, I am going to talk about some recent stories in the equine news world. And the first one is about a 700,000-year-old horse. So, it's nothing short of a world record in DNA research that scientists at the Center of Geogenetics at the Natural History Museum of Denmark have hit. They have sequenced the so far oldest genome for a prehistoric creature. They've done so by sequencing and analyzing short pieces of DNA molecules preserved in bone remnants from a horse that had been kept frozen for the last 700,000 years. In the permafrost of the Yukon, Canada. By tracking the genome that transformed prehistoric wild horses into domestic breeds, the researchers have revealed the genetic makeup of modern horses with unprecedented details. The spectacular results are now published in the international scientific journal that is called Nature. DNA molecules can survive in fossils well after an organism dies. Not as whole chromosomes, but as short pieces that can be assembled back together like a puzzle. Sometimes enough molecules survive that the full genome sequence of extinct species could be resurrected over the last years. The full genome sequence of a few ancient humans and hominids has been characterized, but so far none dated back before 70,000 years. And we were talking about 700,000 years, so it's quite a bit longer. So now, Dr. Orlando and Professor Willersky at the Center for Geogenetics have beaten this DNA record by about 10 times. Therefore, the two researchers, in collaboration with Danish international colleagues, have been able to track major genome changes over the last 700,000 years of evolution on horse lineage. First, by comparing the genome in the 700,000-year-old horse with the genome of a 43,000-year-old horse, 6 present-day horses, and the donkey, researchers could estimate how fast mutations accumulate through time and calibrate a genome-wide mutation rate. This revealed that the last common ancestor of all modern equids was living about 4 to 4.5 million years ago. Therefore, the evolutionary radiation underlying the origin of the horses, donkeys, and zebras reaches back in time twice as long as previously thought. Additionally, this clock revealed multiple episodes of severe demographic fluctuation in horse history, in phase with major climatic changes, such as the last glacial maximum, which was about 20,000 years ago. And the world's only wild horse. The results also put a happy end to the long discussion about the so-called Przewalski horse from the Mongolia. This horse population was discovered by the Western world in the second half of the 19th century and rapidly became threatened. It almost became extinct in the wild by the 1970s, but has survived until now following massive conservation efforts. The evolutionary origin of this horse shows striking physical differences compared to domestic horses, as well as an extra pair of chromosomes, which is still a mystery. Some researchers reveal now that Przewalski horse population became isolated from the lineage, leading to the present-day domestic horses about 50,000 years ago. As the scientists could detect similar levels of genetic diversity within the Przewalski horse genome than in the genomes of several domestic breeds, this suggests that the Przewalski horses are likely genetically viable and therefore worthy of conservation efforts. Which, if you have ever seen what a Przewalski horse looks like, they do look very different from what the domestic horses that we see here look like. They're a lot smaller and they are kind of almost prehistoric looking. They're smaller, their heads are larger, and they also have a lot of traits that horses here do not have, because of the different climate and the different place that they live. They can drink really, really cold water that if you gave to a horse here, they would colic, which is a very interesting fact to me, because maybe it wasn't something that I had thought of, but I read an article about it a long time ago, and now, you know, learning about this 700,000-year-old horse that has created or has made it possible for scientists to create the horse lineage and discover how long ago that the Przewalski horses were separated from a lot of the domestic breeds we see now, it makes a lot of sense that with the way that they look kind of mammoth like too. They're cool looking little horses, and it's definitely, I'm very glad that they are under the conservation status and are being maintained, which is really exciting, because that is a big difference between the Przewalski horses and the domestic horses that we have here. And I hope that they continue to be preserved. Another interesting story is about how to identify a horse. Until recently, horses were genetically branded, or I'm sorry, genetically, I'm talking about this other story now. Until recently, horses were generally branded to be able to identify individual animals. Since this practice gives rise to long-standing wounds and brand marks that cannot be reliably read, there has been a gradual switch towards the use of microchips. But how reliable can a microchip be, and how can it be located and read? Those are the main questions. And are horses injured by having these chips inserted? These issues have been addressed by the team at University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna, and the results are available online at the Veterinary Journal, and they show that the chips are highly biocompatible and easy to read with high-quality scanners. Traditional methods of marking larger farm animals rely on branding with hot irons, freeze branding, or ear tagging. Dogs and cats are instead identified by an implant of a microchip transponder. With very few exceptions, it is now mandatory within the European Union to mark horses by the means of transponders. Nonetheless, some sport horse registries oppose the use of microchips because they believe that the rate of identification failure is high, and that is unacceptable to them. To date, no systematic examinations to see whether chips are easy to decode have been conducted. Manuela Wolf in the group at the University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna has therefore examined the readability of microchips in more than 400 horses. She tested each microchip with three different scanners. The scanners differed in diameter and field strength. The scientists tested both sides of the animal's neck as well. The results were intriguing. The best scanner, equipped with a digital signal processing function that filters interfering signals, detected and read all chips correctly when it was placed on the side of the horse's neck where the chip was implanted, and located nearly 90% of the chips even when the scanner was on the opposite side of the neck. However, the other two scanners performed considerably less well, producing correct reads in around 90% of the cases when on the same side of the neck. On the opposite side of the neck, the success rate ranged between 20 and 25%. As Wolf puts it, it is important the scanners find and read the chips correctly in every case. We can only recommend the top of the range scanner, which would ideally be placed on the side of the horse's neck where the chip was implanted. However, she adds, even the lowest quality scanner we tested performed much better than traditional branding methods of horse identification. Another part of chipping your horse is that it causes less injury than branding does. The major object of using branding relates to pain and long-term damage that's inflicted on the animals. Wolf and her other colleagues thus investigated whether the use of microchip markers was any better. She looked closely at the site of the chip implant on 16 horses of 9 different breeds in various ages that has been submitted to the examination. In the vast majority of cases, the chips seem to have caused absolutely no ill effects. The two animals that were moderately affected had probably only been chipped recently, and there had not yet been time for the wound to heal. As she sums up the findings, not only is chipping far more reliable than marking horses with the traditional methods of branding, we also find that it causes far less injury to animals. This article was very interesting to me because I have heard of people microchipping their horses. Definitely not as much here as you hear about it in Europe, but it was very interesting to me because I have a dog and I have a cat and they both have microchips, and to most of the other people that I know that have dogs or cats, it's almost like a mandatory thing that we know that we need to do. We need to go microchip our animal because if, you know, my dog gets loose and he's at the Humane Society, they're going to be able to read the microchip very easily and contact me. And although let's all hope that I wouldn't lose my horse and no one else would lose their horse, but if you did, that it would be a whole lot easier to identify your horse in that way than in other ways, because my horse doesn't have a hot iron brand or a freeze brand or an ear tag. So there's not really, I mean, other than he's a paint horse and he has markings, there's not really any way to identify my horse. And I know that there have been cases, you know, here in California where people have had their horses stolen or have also had horses dumped on their property. And if I think it would be a good thing to be mandatory to have your horse microchipped, especially because it really does not cause them any injury, and it would make identifying a horse's owner a whole lot easier. So those were two very interesting articles to me, and that is going to sum it up for this segment. And you are listening to Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. In this segment, I am going to talk about a new equine-based show that just premiered on March 9th of this year. And it's by Big Horse Productions, which is out of Las Vegas. And I'm going to read to you a little piece of something that's on their website. Big Horse Productions has been breaking the mold of equine entertainment since 1997. Big Horse Productions was created in 1997 by Eric Martonovich. Eric is a well-known competitive vaulter. He competed over in the United States as well as in Europe. Eric always stood out in the competition arena, performing more for the audience than for the judges, as well as doing things a little more on the edge than others. He then decided that he would have more fun performing to an audience permanently and made it his career. In 1999, he asked his fellow vaulting competitor, Alethea Shelton, to join him in his adventure, and they began to create acts to bring to the road, calling themselves Big Horse Productions, as they were very well known for their enormous Belgian draft horses. And this is Eric Martonovich is, he is a vaulter, so I know him from the vaulting world, and he's definitely a very amazing competitor to watch. Not that he competes anymore, because he's got his whole life tied up in this new production that he is doing. But he had previously had a vaulting team. He was known among the vaulting world. He would Roman ride, I want to say, 8 or 9 Belgians. So, and his Belgians are very large. They're 18 or 19 hands, which is, you know, about 6 feet tall at the base of their neck. And Roman riding is when you have two horses that are side by side, and you have 1 foot on each horse, and you're standing on them, and you are riding them that way. And then he drives, you know, all the other pairs of horses in front of that. So they're two horses wide, and there's 4 pairs of 2 horses. So that was always, you know, I've seen a lot of videos in the past of him doing that, and it's just really amazing to watch. And now he has his new show Gladius that just premiered last month. And Gladius is created by the Big Horse production team based out of Las Vegas. This is a accumulation of a lifelong dream that they've pulled out all the stops on this show. The show features electric performances, spectacular original music, and stunning horses. They take you on a 90-minute journey into the world of Gladius. And I'm going to read you a little bit about each of the main performers who is in this show. So first is Eric Martonovich, who is the co-producer, director, and a performing artist. So Eric, the son of professional dressage trainers Yossi and Noel Martonovich, grew up in Colorado. He has a 20-plus year background in competitive vaulting with over 8 national titles under his belt. In addition to that, he's represented the U.S. in the World Equestrian Games 3 times. Eric has excelled in many equestrian disciplines, but has always liked it best when he had an audience. A true performer, he decided to blaze some trails and branch out on his own, creating custom equestrian acts with an exhilarating blend of circus arts to take to the road. This is where the Big Horse Productions began. Big Horse Productions traveled the nation showcasing their talent at numerous events, such as the National Western Stock Show, Theater Equus, Equine Affair, and many, many more. In 2003, they were hired by the international touring sensation Cavalia to take part in the creation project. They then toured with the show for 2 years before parting ways. They have upgraded everything, including adding more horses to their herd. Eric has blended aerial artistry, fine fire manipulation, pole acrobatics, and more to their impressive show with the equine stunts. He also succeeded to be the first person to Roman ride 8 giant Belgian horses, which I had mentioned a little while ago. He is proud of these accomplishments and continues to amaze crowds with them today. Since then, he created Gladius, which he believes is the accumulation of many years of hard work. He's both proud and excited to bring this powerful show to the road, so the whole nation can have a chance to be a part of this unique experience. Eric's goal is to continue to blaze trails and create performance art like no other in the equine world. And then his co-producer and performing artist, who he started Big Horse Productions with, Alethea Shelton. And she grew up in Virginia and always had a passion for horses and performing arts. These two were combined perfectly when she discovered the sport of vaulting. She's a seasoned vaulter. She's been vaulting as well over 20 years and has competed all over the country. From Virginia to California, she currently holds 6 national titles in the sport. After becoming friends with Eric in 1998, she moved 2,000 miles to Colorado to begin Big Horse Productions with him, believing they could turn their dream into a reality. She traveled with Big Horse Productions for several years. In 2003, she and Eric picked up their things and their newest horse, Comet, and headed to Quebec. They took part in the creation of the touring show Cavalia and then toured with the production for 2 years as a performing artist. When their run on the tour ended, she was happy to relocate to the city of entertainment, Las Vegas. These days, she's working on many new skills, including liberty dressage and aerial arts. She is proud to be a part of Gladius and to show the world what she has poured her heart into for so many years. As a licensed massage therapist for 14 years, Alethea also enjoys helping people and is very passionate about their Hoof Prints program, which they are bringing to the Gladius Tour. She's excited to be able to help deserving kids with her enthusiasm for performance art. And they also have a head trainer named Laura, and she was born into a Danish circus family and enjoyed a childhood surrounded by exotic animals, horses, and trainers from around the world. And she travels with them as well. Sean Stone, who is the artistic director, was born and raised in Iowa and began competitive gymnastics when he was 12. He was an NCAA gymnast and acquired his BA in Studio Arts and Communication Studies at the University of Iowa. In 2006, Sean began his career as a performing artist in Las Vegas. He then did multiple contracts performing for SeaWorld, San Diego, and Cirque de la Mar and Riptide. Most recently, he spent 3 years performing performing in La Rev, The Dream for Win, Las Vegas. Along with his 10 years of coaching gymnastics and working with youth, he has a passion for working creatively with people all over his life. And lastly is Lisa Varmbo, who was born in Norway, and she is another performing artist with them. And she moved to Las Vegas to join Big Horse Productions in December of 2010. She's been active in vaulting since 1998 and was one of the very first girls in Norway to discover the sport. After years of working hard to excel in vaulting, Lisa gained both flexibility and strength. Lisa took her first gold medal in a Norwegian championship in the year 2000. And the joy was great. This is the first official gold medal ever given to a Norwegian champion in vaulting. So the moment was both big for Lisa and big for the sport. She was only 15 years old then. Since now, she has been she has 8 Norwegian vaulting championships under her belt and also represented Norway in the World Equestrian Games. And that would be the last one they list on here, although there are other there are other performing artists that perform with them. And I am very upset that, of course, they had to, you know, have their first show in Colorado. It would have been very cool to watch, and I hope they do come to California. I have seen Cavalia, which is similar to the production that they are putting on, but it's not quite the same. And I've seen Cavalia more than once, and every time it is just, it's amazing. It's very beautiful. And I can only imagine what theirs is like, because I know how he is as a vaulter, and I could only imagine how exciting this is for him and how much work he's put into it. And they have a variety of horses. They've got a whole bunch of Belgians, which I had talked about a little while ago. They have a bunch of Percherons. I know they took a horse from a friend of my vaulting coaches in Texas, whose name is Deuce, and he's a big Percheron. And they, at the time when they had him in Texas, they had no idea what they were going to do with him. Nobody could train him. And when they finally decided to just give him to Eric because they wanted to be done with him, they couldn't deal with him anymore. And now he is in one of the starring acts in their show Gladius. So he's definitely an amazing horse person trainer as well. And that is going to wrap it up for this segment. We'll be back in a couple minutes. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, well, I will dry them all. I will brush them all away now. I'm on your side. Times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a breeze over troubled water, I will let when you're down and out, when you're on the streets, yes, when evening falls so hard, well, I will comfort you, well, I will comfort you, I'll take your part. Over
I will lay me down like a bridge over troubled water. Oh, lay me down. Sail on, silver girl. Won't you sail on by? Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way now. See how they shine like silver on the water shines. If you need a friend, I'm sailing right behind. Oh, just like a bridge over troubled water, I will ease your mind like a bridge over
This is DJ Detour back with my last segment, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And for this last segment, I am going to talk a little bit about what we can do for our horses with this weird weather that we have going on, because we've definitely had some really hot days, some really cold days, some rainy days, some days that are both. And I know that my horse is, I think he's a little confused on what the heck is going on with the weather. So I know my poor guy looks like half of a woolly mammoth. He's half shedded out his winter coat and left half of it there. And I feel bad for him. So one of the first things that is definitely helpful to our equine friends is in this funky weather situation is to not give them any baths. When it's colder and raining, something that's very important to them is the oils that they have naturally in their coat. So when we bathe our horses, we're going to wash out those oils that are going to keep them warm during the colder spurts of weather that we've been having. So definitely not a good time to bathe your horse. Wait till it gets warmer. The second thing we can do is we can continue to do a really good job grooming them, so they still are getting out the excess amount of dirt and hair that is going to be in their coats, because when it rains, it gets muddy and your horse is going to get gross. So it is helpful to them to get all the extra amount of dirt and loose hair out of their coat so they can stay cooler during the hot weather, and during the warm weather, all that dirt is not going to turn into mud. And I know that depending on who you talk to, I don't blanket my horse, because naturally horses don't wear blankets out in the wild. They do not wear blankets. And when we blanket our horses, we're interrupting the natural cycle of their bodies and as well as their fur growth. So when we blanket our horses, they're not going to get their winter coat in as they normally should. And it's also going to mess with their inner body cycles. So I don't blanket my horse because here, it does not get cold enough that we really need to worry about that. If we lived in northern Montana, it might be more of a worry, but it does not get that cold here. My horse does not wear a blanket. He's survived just fine. Something you do want to make sure your horse has for both cold and hot weather is shelter. So when it's raining, they do have somewhere that's a little bit drier to go, as well as drier on the ground as well. So depending, I know the horse, the shelter that my horse has, it gets really muddy in there. So when I can, I try to use a type of different types of beddings to keep it a little bit drier for him. So if he wants that amount of shelter, that he has access to it. And in his shelter, it gets really deep with mud. So sometimes I will bring out rice holes, which are really good for helping thicken up the mud, kind of. It'll absorb a lot, but it also make the mud more compact, which is kind of a weird thing. But when it gets that deep, you got to put something in it to make it a little bit more compact. Something you also want to make sure that your horse has is clean water. When it rains, a lot of times a lot of dirt and debris will get in your horse's water. So you want to make sure that there's none of that junk in your horse's water, because horses drink a lot, about 15 gallons a day. So you want to make sure that they do have access to clean water as well. During the colder times, since I don't blanket my horse, something you can do, my horse doesn't need it personally because he's got plenty of body fat on him. But if you have a horse who is on the skinnier side or tends to get colder, something you can do is give them some grain to help give them some extra calories for when it's really cold out. And those are a couple things that you can do with this weird weather. When we are having our warmer days, like we should be having this weekend, you want to make sure that you are able to fly spray your horse or put a fly mask on them or some type of protective fly something. Because I know the last time we had a bit of warm weather here, the flies definitely came out and were irritating my horse. They're all over his belly. And so I make sure to try to, if I can, during the warmer weather, fly spray him once a day. It's not always realistic, but that's best. A lot of the fly sprays say that they work for up to 14 days, but that's definitely not true, sadly. It'd be really nice if we could only fly spray every 2 weeks. But from my years of experience, I have never found a fly spray that works more than a couple hours. Although I can't be out there every couple hours to fly spray my horse, that's realistically about how long they last. And then if you use natural ones, they last even less, sadly. So, and another thing you can use is fly mask, because a lot of horses have problems with flies getting in their eyes, and it's harder for them on their bellies. They can use their legs to try to get the flies away, but on their face, they usually end up rubbing their face on things, which can also cause not only, you know, loss of hair and slight wounds, but if they rub their head on a fence post that has a nail in it, they can cause some serious injury. So putting a fly mask on your horse is always helpful during the warmer weather. And it's, I know at the barn that I used to be at, we've had the Humane Society called on us because people thought we were blindfolding our horses, which we weren't. They were wearing fly masks, and they are definitely able to see through fly masks. For horses, it's kind of like wearing sunglasses. So a lot of horses actually like their fly masks. It's going to keep them from injury. Not blindfolding them, although that was quite the interesting conversation with the gentleman who came out from the Humane Society. So I didn't think you guys were blindfolding them, but I had to double check. So that's another thing that you can do for your horse in the warmer spurts of weather that we've been having. So to wrap it all up today, I have talked about some gimmicks and training tools that I really enjoy using with horses and I believe are very beneficial. I also talked about the 700,000-year-old horse that has its genes sequenced now. Following that, I talked about the show Gladius that has just premiered and is continuing to show in Colorado and hopefully will be coming to California soon. And lastly, I talked about some things that we can do for our horse with this funky weather we've been experiencing lately. So that's going to wrap it up for my show Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. You can catch it next week at 3 o'clock on Wednesday. Have a good rest of your day.
Arms around you, good and tight. All I have is she for me to say. Hey, hey, hello, Mary Lou. And goodbye, heart. Mary Lou, I'm so in love with you. I knew Mary Lou. We never part. Yes, hello, Mary Lou, goodbye.
Long time no see in motion. Let's make a fun devotion. I'm with you on that notion. Nothing doing nothing's nothing.